École normale supérieure, savoir en multimédia.
Good morning everybody. For starters, thank you for your invitation. I'm very pleased to talk to you today. And as I had the choice, I propose to talk about my favorite topic, which is eye contact in human cognition. I would like to offer you an overview of what we know today about eye contact, propose you some new models about eye contact processing, and if I have time, to evoke what could be done with this species of knowledge for therapeutic approach. So as you know, eyes are special organs in the sense that they are both a channel that receives sensory information, but also a channel that emits signals for others to decode. And when emitting these signals, eyes forms a new conceptual and more complex object, which is referred to gaze. In popular belief, eyes are described as a window to the soul, reflecting intentions, emotions, and thoughts. And among all eye directions, some people even granted eye contact with a special power, believing that humans are literally the sense of being watched. Social and human science indeed recognize that humans have a special sensitivity to eye contact, which has been proposed to be pregnant, patent in our daily environment and our culture. So for example, very recently, Olivier Morin stated that among all the portraits that have been painted during the 16th century, those displaying eye contact are much more depicted in our today's art book. He also demonstrated that during this Renaissance period, the portraits displaying eye contact grows regularly, strongly, and remain prevalent for centuries. Also, you can observe in our daily environment that we are surrounded by a poster advertising, staring at the consumer as to directly address them or to capture their attention. So as an experimental object, eye contact has mainly been investigated by social psychologists who stated that despite the interpretation of eye contact varies as a function to some variables, such as the distance between participants, but also the duration of the eye contact, of course, despite this statement, eye contact is mainly perceived as a positive situation that have even a positive impact on human behavior. Finally, eye contact has been investigated more recently, since about 30 years, by cognitive neuroscience with the emergence of social neuroscience, that reveals that despite it has been stressed that the interpretation and the use of eye contact varies among cultures, social neuroscience reveals several levels of processes that are thought to be universal and that are at least been reported in American, European, and Asian cultures. So let us begin with some developmental statements. At the phylogenetic viewpoint, the morphology of the human eyes has been advanced to have evolved so that eye has become a main source of information in the face. So here Kobayashi and Koshima identifies two types of saliency of the eyes: the saliency of the eye outline against the face and the saliency of the iris against the sclera. And they demonstrated that the majority of primate species do not possess any of these saliencies, rendering their eye very difficult to discriminate in the face. Some species may possess one or the other of the saliency, but the human eyes is the only to possess two types of saliency, rendering his eye direction very easy to discriminate. This converges with a robust finding of the literature, showing that when humans process faces, whatever this face is drawn, photographed, or processed during a real interaction, then firstly and mainly explore the eye regions just before the mouth in a constant triangular exploration of the face. At the ontogenic viewpoint, it is well known that as soon as 4 years of age, infants implicitly associated eye direction with an attention of our mental state. For example, here, if you ask to a child, what is somebody doing? They respond that she's thinking about something, despite, of, for example, respond that she simply look at a prod. The observation of gaze behavior in humans have led several authors to a similar model of gaze development, of social aptitude development, sorry, in which the development of a gaze behavior are a prerequisite for the acquisition of theory of mind. So in this model, human infants seems to be able to discriminate as soon as birth, eye direction, making clear difference between direct gaze and averted gaze. Around 6 months, they automatically follow the other's eye direction toward the surrounding object of attention. And finally, slightly later, use their own eye direction to incite others to pay attention to the object of interest. So these three processing are thought to be necessary for developing later theory of mind, which is in this model is thought to emerge around 4 years of age after the acquisition of language. However, more recent data suggests that theory of mind emerged much more earlier during the second years of development. So for example here, the author manipulated a classical fast belief task in which an experimenter put an object in the box and go away. During her absence, the object is moved in the other box, and when the experimenter comes back, she will either look for the object in the box she's supposed to believe the object is, so in the box matching her belief, or in the other box. And manipulating several conditions, author found that the infant's age of 15 months systematically look at longer to the mismatching conditions as if they were surprised by the experimenter's behavior, and that suggesting that they already possess a representation of other false belief. So such pieces of evidence support the view that the development of gaze processing just precede early acquisition of theory of mind. So based on such observation, Baron Cohen proposed a model of development of social aptitude based on an innate brain module fully devoted to detect eyes in the environment. This model is the most famous of the literature, the more reported and the most tested one, despite it has been criticized. So it has been criticized, for example, regarding the modularity of the processing, but I will not develop this point today, but also because among all eye directions, several evidence lead towards the view that those creating mutual attention with the infant induce early and specific mechanisms. Thus, for example, Perrottet-Emery proposed that the human brain should be equipped with innate and specific mechanisms devoted to process mutual attention, which is mainly triggered by eye contact in humans. So let us explore this hypothesis at the cerebral level. First at all, when using electroencephalography and computing the mean activity in response to face perception, we observe this typical early component named the N170. As you probably know, this N170 is well known to be increased and delayed when human process a face as compared to all other visual objects. And it has been proposed when it was discovered that this wave was a brain marker of face processing, reflecting how much face are special in human cognition. Slightly later, it has been discovered that this wave was still increase and delayed when only the isolated eye regions were presented to subject instead of the whole face. So leading to the view that this N170 could be initially a bread marker of eye processing, extending later to the processing of the face. This beautiful developmental study supported this view. So here the author recorded four groups of subjects from 4 years of age to the adult age and systematically presented several visual stimuli. So full faces, isolated eye regions, inverted faces, scrambled faces, and finally flowers. And they found that the only N170 that was structured and reached her maximum as soon as the 4 years of age was here, the N170, in response to the isolated eye regions. Even then, 170 in response to face needs several years to be structured and reaches its maximal response. So naturally, the next step was to address with this N170 was initially a brain marker of eye contact process. So in this study, for example, we presented Y-band-1, the face, to participants, and the face moved the eyes either toward the subject, like on the left, or away from them. And thus, we show that, as expected, that the N170 was indeed increased and delayed when the face displayed an eye contact with the subject here in red and orange as compared to other conditions in green. So this converged with other data of the literature recorded in a 4-month-old baby who already show a greater early negativity for direct as compared to averted gaze, suggesting thus that the N170 could initially be a brain marker of eye contact. Now to the question whether eye contact involves specific brain regions, the response is clearly no, it does not. Both direct and averted gaze may modulate several regions, in particular of the social brain network, as a function to the context or the task demand. However, at least two brain regions are known to possess a cell population that code specifically for one direction of eyes, or more generally for one direction of attention. The first one is the superior temporal sulcus here. And indeed, intracranial recording in the macaque shown that some cell population in this structure responded here for direct attention, whatever this attention was displayed by the face or the gaze. They also respond when only the gaze were oriented toward the subject. Other cell population respond here, for example, for downward orientation, and other for upward, leftward, and rightward. The second structure is, of course, the amygdala, which is well known to possess representation of several eye directions, but also of several emotions. And here it has been more particularly demonstrated in the macaque brain that the lateral extended part of the amygdala possesses cell population for respectively direct and averted gaze, and in the monkey brain, these regions respond more for averted configuration of eyes. So there is no direct evidence that such cell population exists in human, but there is indirect evidence, and we have all the reasons to believe that they exist. Except that in the human brain, both the superior temporal sulcus and the amygdala are known to respond more for direct configuration of gaze as compared to an averted one. At least when the face displays neutral, happy, or angry expression, which are probably the expressions that are the more processed during daily interaction. So interestingly, in particular, the amygdala is also known to respond to the unconscious perception of the gaze. This has been again stressed recently in this study, recording in the patient's NT. So NT is a blind sight patient who has a particularity to have a bilateral destruction of the primary visual cortex. So despite he sees nothing, he is able to guess above chance whether a face displays direct gaze or not. And in the scan, his right amygdala show greater activation for direct as compared to averted gaze stimuli. So indeed, one particularity of eye contact seems to particularly stimulate the subcortical pathway of visual detection involving the amygdala, but also the superior colliculi and the pulvinar in the thalamus. And according to Senju and Johnson, this pathway can have direct influence on several regions of the social brain network, dealing respectively with face gaze perception, intention reading, or emotion reading. So in the same time, as a function to task demand, the same regions may be modulated also by the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, which is known to implement decision-making. And the combination of these two influences result in the famous eye contact effect, which can be observed at the behavioral level. So indeed, eye contact is known to impact on cognition and behavior, and the first obvious eye contact effect is its capability to capture attention. As you probably know, when we want to determine whether a stimuli forms a specific category in the brain and can be automatically detected, we use the visual search paradigm. So in such paradigm, the subject has to detect whether a target was present or absent. So for example here, can you tell me where is the animal? Here. Okay, and now where is the face? So usually the face is detected much more faster, and this reflects the pop-out effect of the face, which are detected very fastly whatever the number of distractors is in the scene. So one of the very first questions addressed in cognitive neuroscience was whether direct gaze may pop out among other eye directions. Several authors have addressed this question and all conclude that no, direct gaze did not pop out. However, all these studies reveal asymmetries of processing that globally gave priority for the detection of a direct gaze. For example, here, so the participants had to detect a direct gaze among averted gaze or averted gaze among direct gaze, and we manipulated some contextual factors such as the head orientation, which could be frontal or deviated, and the visual field of appearance of the target that appeared here on the right but may appear on the left. So here are the reaction time obtained when the subject detected the presence of the averted gaze. We can observe that this detection was significantly modulated by all the factors manipulated, increasing with the number of distractors, of course, but also depending on head orientation and visual field of appearance. By contrast, direct gaze were globally detected faster. Its detection increased with the number of distractors, showing that the stimuli did not pop out in this context, but the reaction time were stable, whatever the other contextual information. So it is all the more surprising to fail to find such a pop-out effect, as it is well known that direct gaze capture attention as soon as the earliest age. So Teresa Farroni here demonstrated that as soon as 2 to 5 days of age, infants look at longer and much often to face displaying direct gaze as compared to averted gaze. And here it appears that this effect was really robust. So this graph reflects the bias for exploring averted gaze and the bias for exploring direct gaze, and each triangle representing one infant. So we can see here that only 2 children have a bias for the exploration of averted gaze, while the majority of the other infants have a bias towards the direct gaze exploration. So this attentional captures is well known to continue at the adult age, and has even been proved to be very hard to inhibit. So for example, here we use the Stroop paradigm. So the subject has to determine in which color the word is written. And we manipulated 2 conditions, the incongruent one, where the word here designates another color, and the neutral one, where the word was just a series of X. So you know that when we compute the difference between the 2 conditions, we obtain the famous Stroop interference effect, reflecting that experimental readers are unable to inhibit the sense of the word. So in this paradigm, we just add an image of eye just above the word, and we instructed the participant that this image was absolutely not informative for the task, that was true, and had to be ignored. Despite this instruction, we found that participants were disturbed in the task by the presence of eye contact as compared to closed eyes. But in another group, if we compare directly averted eyes versus closed eyes, we did not reproduce such an effect, suggesting here that eye contact has indeed attracted automatically the attention of the participants. So, of course, averted gaze is also known to be related to special mechanisms. For example, in the Posner-like paradigm, the subject has to detect the side of appearance of the target, and it is well known that if a face preceded the target appearance and look at the side of the target location, the subject will be faster to detect this target than in the incongruent condition where the face looks at the other side. But interestingly, it has been stressed by several authors that such an effect is only observed or much more easy to observe if a direct gaze initiates each trial. So this suggests that this attentional shift triggered by averted gaze is an initial eye contact effect. So probably a direct gaze first captures attention, and this attentional capture is transferred to other eye direction. So this is supported by this beautiful study of Sibra and Gergely, where the experimenter will explore one of the 2 objects laying on the table, but before the exploration will either create an eye contact with the infant or not. And the author showed that the infant will explore the object of the adult's attention only in the condition where the experimenter has looked at the infant. So the author have even advanced that eye contact perception allows by this way to transfer general knowledge on the environment. So, no, eye contact is also known to have other effects on human cognition, and at least 4 of them seems to be very robust. First at all, direct gaze is known to impact, modulate our perception of others. In particular, an individual is generally judged more attractive and more competent when she looks at the observer. Secondly, as reported by social psychologists, the perception of an eye contact is known to favor a prosocial affiliative behavior. So, for example, people are less likely to take from others, or more likely to donate to a charitable cause, or here are more likely to let money in an honesty box to pay their drink when an image of Darragues is displayed above the equipment as compared to an image of flower here. Interestingly, such an effect of eye contact has been proved to be observable at a lower level. In particular, the perception of a direct gaze is known to increase mimicry behavior. So mimicry is shown as a basic form of affiliated behavior. And in this study, for example, the participants were presented with video of an experimenter who just do a simple movement of the hand. So she will either open the hand or close the hand. In this experience, so the experimenter either look at the subject or away, and they also use a control condition where the attention of the viewer was captured by an exogenous cue appearing either centrally or peripherally. In this task, the subject had the choice. He could either do the same movement as the experimenter or do the opposite movement. So when the participant decide to do the same movement and the experimenter is looking at him, the participant is faster to initiate his movement as compared to all other conditions, showing here that at a very low level, eye contact perception has facilitates mimicry behavior. The third effect is the memory effect of eye contact. It has been reported the first time by Masson and Macri in 2004 in an experiment where initially the subjects were presented with faces with direct and averted gaze, and in a second stage during a surprise recognition test were presented with old and new faces displaying closed eyes. In this study, they reported that the participants were better to recognize the face that have previously displayed a direct gaze as compared to an averted gaze. Initially, such an effect has been directly related to another results of the literature reported by Nathalie Georges, showing that when passively encoding faces with direct gaze increase the activity in the fusiform gyrus as compared to averted gaze, and the fusiform gyrus, which is known to implement the encoding of the face. So it has been proposed that the memory effect of eye contact could reflect a specific enhancement of the face encoding. However, more recent data suggests that such an effect could be more diffuse and may be extended to other information. So, for example, here with Julie, we reproduce similar study, but by manipulating two variables. So the first group of participants here show either individual displaying direct attention or deviated attention, but were seen twice with neutral and angry expression. By contrast, in the second group, the individual were seen either with angry expression or with a neutral expression, but were seen twice with a direct attention and with a deviated attention. During the surprise recognition test, we reproduce the bias reported by Masson and Macri in the first group only. Thus, faces that have displayed direct gaze have been better recognized than other faces. However, such an effect was not reproduced when manipulating emotion. And interestingly, when in the scan, when these stimuli were encoded, we found that the direct gaze conditions induce a specific activity in the right hippocampus, which is known to be involved in episodic memory or self-relevant memory. So this result suggests that the memory effect of eye contact could be extended to other information than those included in the face. So we are testing this hypothesis in my team. I will just present you the preliminary result or first experiment. In this experiment, we thus presented each face displaying either direct gaze or averted gaze with an auditive sentence, which could be either positive or negative. So during the surprise recognition test, the subjects were presented with old and new faces, but also with old and new sentences. We reported two biases known in the literature. First of all, we reproduce the bias in favor to direct gaze, which were better recognized than averted gaze. We also found that the negative sentences were better recognized than the positive sentences. But interestingly, this bias in favor to the negative sentences disappeared when the sentences have been encoded during a direct gaze. So, as we advance, this suggests that during the direct gaze perception, both positive and negative sentences have been possessed the same relevance and have benefited from the same encoding. So we are now testing the strength of this memory effect, manipulating other objects like unmeaningful symbol objects. And finally, it is interesting to note that when authors investigate eye contact effect, they often report that the particularity of eye contact is to initiate communication, initiate social interaction. But they often forgot that a more basic feature of eye contact is to be directed toward the self. And for this reason, it has been advanced by several authors that eye contact should enhance self-awareness. So recently, with my PhD student, Mathieu Balthazar, we investigate this question for the first time in this paradigm where the subjects were confronted with emotional image and have as particular instruction to focus on their internal states and to evaluate the intensity of their own physiological reaction in response to the emotional image. So they have to rate the intensity of those reactions on a scale here. But the point is that each emotional image were preceded by a context image. In the first group, this context image could be a cross, a car, or a face with a direct gaze, and in the second group, a cross, a face with averted gaze, or a face with a direct gaze. And of course, during the experiment, we recorded the actual physiological response of the participant. So we recorded the electrodermal response, which reflects the intensity of their emotional reaction, but also the zygomaticus here, that are facial muscles known to react to positive experience, and the corrugator here, that are known to react to negative experience. And we investigate here the correlation between this actual physiological reaction and the report of the participants about this reaction. So we observe that these two variables only correlated in the eye contact context. So suggesting here that eye contact has indeed increased self-awareness in the subject. Interestingly, when comparing cross, averted eyes, and eye contact in the second group, we reproduce this systematic correlation between the variable in the eye contact context, but also found a similar but more restricted effect of averted eye perception. So suggesting here that the perception of a face may favor self-awareness success, but with a maximum effect under eye contact context. So today, I think that eye contact occurs in three stages. First at all, it indeed captures attention and at this level interferes with other with the resource required by the task. At the second stage, he has a self-reflective power, returning, inciting the viewer to return his attention toward himself. And this self-reflecting effect activates in the participant's self-awareness. In the third stage, this self-awareness reverberates in the social brain in secondary effects of self-referencing. So, for example, self-awareness is known to correspond to a particular encoding process which renders the individual sensitive to particular aspects of the environment that are potentially self-relevant. So they could predict that direct gaze render concomitant information more relevant and more important to encode. In the same way, by activating self-awareness, direct gaze may modulate our ability to place the self in the social context and favor the selection of an action that serves the self. Also, it is well known that the effect of eye direction on others' perception have been often related to self-relevance effects. Now, the attentional capture probably occurs very early during eye contact perception, as soon as the first millisecond, and is probably triggered by the subcortical pathway of visual detection. The self-awareness effect may appear slightly later for longer exposure and should be observable in brain regions related to self-representation, such as the insula, the anterior cingulate cortex, and somatosensorial regions. And finally, the secondary effect of self-referencing should be observed for longer exposure of gaze superior, probably to 1 second, and should be observed in task-related brain regions. Now, another question is important to address here. Are these effects truly specific to the perception of eye contact, or could they be induced by any self-directed cues? So there is very few evidence in the literature to respond to this question. But it is important to note that direct gaze is not the only configuration of gaze that impact others' perception. For example, it is well known that an angry expression is evaluated more intense with a direct gaze as compared with an averted gaze, but by contrast, a fearful face is evaluated more frightened when displaying an averted gaze as compared to a direct gaze. So this has been typically interpreted in terms of self-relevance, in the sense that an angry face is looking at the viewer is very threatening. But by contrast, a fearful face looking in the surrounding environment probably informs about a potential danger. So during my postdoc with Julie, we used this self-relevance effect to investigate when and where the brain process different social signals and when and where they integrate, the brain integrates those signals together. So Julie thought that emotions were processed first, but I knew it was gaze. So to address this question, we created this paradigm where an individual was seen in a neutral and intermediate position and will turn her attention either toward the participant or toward someone else. But when turning her attention, she could still display a neutral expression or express anger. and she could either pointing or not with a finger. So importantly, in this paradigm, we manipulate the number of social cues that were directed toward the participant, either only one eye direction or two eye direction plus her finger or eye direction plus anger, and, or three eye direction plus finger plus anger. So in this first version, we recorded EEG under fMRI and we asked the participants whether she was addressing them or her or other. So behaviorally, when we asked the participant how much he felt involved by the scene, he of course responded that if he was more involved when the individual displayed direct as compared to averted gaze. But interestingly, this feeling of self-involvement increased with the number of self-directed social cues. So suggesting here that we managed to manipulate the self-relevance of the social event. But with Julie, we were surprised to observe how much this pattern was reproducible and observable at the cerebral level. So, first at all, we discovered that Julie and I were wrong. All social signals were processed exactly at the same time, independently, probably by a different cell population. But as soon as 100 milliseconds, the cell population responded systematically for the more relevant signals. So the P1 was greater for anger, pointing gesture, and self-directed attention as compared respectively to neutral, no pointing, and averted attention. Interestingly, these three cues were integrated together at the level of the P2, so around 2 milliseconds on central electrode here. And this P2 had exactly the same pattern that our behavioral results. So this P2 was increased for direct gaze conditions as compared to averted gaze, and in the direct gaze condition, increased with the number of self-directed cues. Introducing the value of the P2 in the fMRI, we discovered that this pattern of activity was subtended by the premotor system, suggesting that when the participants had to focus on the other's direction of attention, this activates mainly preparation to action. So, in a second stage with Marwa Elzine and Lucie Gamon, we reproduced this study in EEG, but this time the subject has to determine whether the individual was angry or neutral. So we first observed that the integration between the three social cues occurs in this context slightly earlier, and was spatially shifted at the level of the temporal electrodes. But so this interaction was observed at the level of the N170, and as for the P2, this N170 was greater for direct as compared to averted gaze, and in the direct gaze condition, increased with the number of self-directed cues. But this time, this pattern of activity was subtended by the orbitofrontal and the amygdala regions as the subject here process emotion instead of direction of attention. And finally, in these two experiments, we also investigate the time frequency. And here you can see the early oscillatory activity around 100 milliseconds and 300 milliseconds. In the theta band of frequency, so between 4 and 7 hertz. This frequency is known to reflect the encoding of the information. So here we discovered, little by chance, that the strength of the synchronization in this particular band indeed increase in the direct gaze condition with the number of self-directed cues. So suggesting here that indeed the more the accused is self-driven, the more it is encoded by the brain and the more it could be later retrieved. So this theory of results demonstrated how much the brain is sensitive to a self-directed attention, suggesting that the eye contact effect that we observe could be driven by other social cues, such as pointing, for example, but also such as self-directed speech. This is supported by the study that I presented you before, where the infant explores the object of the adult's attention when the adults create eye contact, but the author reproduces the same effect when, instead of the eye contact, the author manipulates a mother race, which is typically a self-directed infant speech. Also, there are some reasons to believe that the human brain could possess cells populations that responded in general to self-directed cues, such as here in this study of Campe et al. That found that in the medial prefrontal cortex, in green here, little regions respond for the detection, for the perception of a direct gaze as compared to averted gaze, but also to the hearing of our own name as compared to other name. So there is several reasons to believe that initially the brain possesses specific mechanisms devoted to process self-directed attention with a particular sensitivity to eye contact. Very soon in the development, this mechanism seems to extend to other direction of attention. And together, this processing actively participates, of course, to the development of joint attention, but also, as I show you, to the development of emotion reading. And finally, altogether, this mechanism allows the emergence of theory of mind. We can also advance that at each stage of development, human acquired a higher level of self-awareness. So what is special about eye contact? Eye contact is a rudimentary form of social contact from which human seems to be able to construct and maintain during life an elaborated representation of self on others and of the environment. And if I have time, I would like just to evoke what could be done with these pieces of knowledge for therapeutic purpose. Do I have the time?
Yes.
Yes, I have. So it will be brief. So when we investigate eye processing, we spontaneously associated this process to one disorder, which is the autistic spectrum disorder. It is not clear whether the eye contact effect are maintained or not in this particular pathology. Sorry. So, for example, with Coralie Chevalier, we adapted the Stroop eye. We named this paradigm the Stroop eye task in child, manipulating this time closed eyes, direct gaze and flowers. And we found that both the typical development child and the child suffering from autistic spectrum disorder were more disturbed by the presence of a direct gaze as compared to a closed eye, suggesting here that they are sensitive to the attentional capture of eye contact. However, when comparing the results obtained for social as compared to non-social stimuli, gaze versus flowers, we found that child with typical development are more disturbed by the presence of the eyes, while the child with autistic spectrum disorder were more disturbed by the presence of the flowers. So it is well known that indeed children with autistic spectrum disorder avoid the eye regions. So the triangular expression of the face I show you at the beginning were totally destroyed in this particular disorder. This suggests that eye contact may be a good tool in this pathology to diagnose the disorder, but it's obviously not a good tool for therapeutic purpose. So recently, we initiate a new project of research, turning our attention towards Alzheimer's disease. So Alzheimer's disease is not only characterized by a cognitive decline, but also by a social withdrawal. And this withdrawal is particularly pronounced during the forgotten period, that is a period between the diagnosis and the institutionalization of the patients. Interestingly, it has been advanced in the literature that the cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease follows in a reverse manner developmental stages. And this suggests that eye contact processes could be preserved up to a very late stage of the disease. And this is supported by this following study, where the author explore the eye contact behavior of patients suffering from Alzheimer's disease as compared to control, and show that the patient do not differ in terms of eye contact behavior as compared to the control participant, by contrast to other dementia, for example, frontotemporal dementia, where the patient do not use eye contact, or semantic dementia where, with an overview of eye contact during conversation. So, to be continued, because we're just starting. This could just suggest that in Alzheimer's disease, we could use eye contact to avoid the social withdrawal, to increase the quality of the social exchange, but also for preserving them for the cognitive decline, for example, using the memory effect of eye contact, and so on. So thank you for your attention. I just would like to thank my collaborator, and particularly Julie Grez and her team. Thank you.